Finding the right data matters. As a marketing services company, your clients will struggle to reach their ideal customers without fresh, accurate data. Learn how you can integrate entire email databases into your product offering at everymarketmedia.com.
You're listening to The Corporate Data Show, a podcast dedicated to helping marketing services companies leverage data for their clients. Whether you're looking for techniques and strategies or tools and resources, you've come to the right place. Let's get into the show.
Welcome back to the Corporate Data Show. We're here today with Michael Levy. He's the principal of GZ Consulting. Michael, how are you doing today?
I'm doing just great. Glad to be here.
Thanks for joining us. So tell our listeners a little bit about what you're up to over at GZ Consulting.
Sure. GZ Consulting is an advisory service. I work mostly with vendors in the sales intelligence space. I do a little bit of work with end buyers of sales intelligence solutions, but most of my work is actually working with the companies doing market research, competitive intelligence, product management, product marketing. I'm one of those guys that wears a lot of hats, and because of that, I'm bald.
Okay, that's great. That's great. Well, I think I read a lot of your stuff. I know you've got a blog, you've got a newsletter and so forth, which I read, and I think makes you exceptionally qualified to talk about what we've been throwing around behind the scenes this morning. So for the listeners, we've been talking about sales intelligence, and Michael's been enlightening me. You know, I feel like I'm an industry guy a little bit, about what sales intelligence is. And his definition, I think, will interest everybody listening this morning. So let's talk about sales intelligence. Let's talk about how it's different than business intelligence. And I guess, Michael, chiefly, why do you think people listening to this show need to learn what sales intelligence is?
Sure. Well, first off, business intelligence is a set of general analytical tools.
Okay.
It's used for sales, but it's used for lots of other things across the company. So when they talk about data warehousing and analytics and big data, those are all elements of business intelligence.
Okay.
Sales intelligence really focused on how do we make sales reps more effective and more efficient. I think it's important to look at it both ways. So when you talk about making somebody more effective, mm-hmm. that's actually looking at how do they do their job better.
Okay.
Okay, so in the case of a sales rep, making them more effective means you're helping them better qualify leads. You're helping them with messaging when they make their initial calls in. You want to have warm calls where you have some knowledge, mm-hmm. reason to be calling into mm-hmm. a prospect, instead of simply just cold calling. Cold calling is a very ineffective method of, just like email blasts are fairly ineffective. Mm-hmm. It's a spray shot approach to the world.
Sure.
But when you're doing that, yes, you hit your target sometimes, but you spend a lot of time missing targets.
Sure, a lot of wheel spin.
Warm up a call. You can be much more effective because you have a reason to call, whether it's somebody's new at the company, and you welcome them to that organization, recent promotion, new product launches,
right.
recent M&A event, funding event, some reason to give you a cause and to show that you've done some basic research on the company.
Yeah. It kind of follows that SDR piece. I mean, I hear you're saying cold calling, you're saying sales intelligence. Do you sort of mean that applies too to the popular, I guess, account-based marketing or account-based selling where you'll see, I mean, we say email blasts, I agree with you. You know, 80,000 emails going out to solicit folks doesn't necessarily make sense. But one-to-one communication, like you're talking about within the context, and I guess I'm asking you, you're saying sales intelligence. Does the SDR count? You know, is that part of the marketing team?
SDR originally was not too much a part of this, but there's this emerging group of companies called account-based sales development
okay.
services, which is really sort of a subset of sales intelligence. In some cases, they partner with sales intelligence vendors to bring in SI content through their APIs.
Mm-hmm.
But what the ABSD vendors do is they really look at how do we go and set a cadence for communications.
Okay.
They'll help with prospecting to do better targeted prospecting instead of just random calling, providing some basic information about that prospect before calling in, and then really setting a schedule and cadence for communications, whether that's email templates that are then scheduled to go off after a certain number of days,
mm-hmm.
and to call, things like that. So they create a schedule and a strategic approach that can be tweaked and measured at companies.
Yeah, that can be shared between, I guess, sales directly, either, I guess, in the sense that sales is owning an account that already exists or in firms where sales prospects themselves.
Right.
Definitely agree with you. A cold in spray and pray method, I mean, that's barely being used for anything but transactions anymore, I think. So what are some of the things that people can use to soften? I've got, you know, I can see some of the obvious things. Okay. The, like you said, the recent funding round, congratulations. I mean, what else? What else do you feel like qualifies kind of, or maybe who are some of the folks that have offerings in this space and they're maybe give some folks idea, or like the listeners, some ideas what they can use.
Well, one of the features that the firms have developed over the last 4 or 5 years are called sales triggers.
Okay.
These go beyond standard news. In the past, the sales intelligence vendors would just provide news about a company.
Yeah.
But it was fairly broad and the precision wasn't very high.
Okay.
So, you know, you might get 2, you might get 5, you might get 0 alerts on a company in a day, but how many of them were actually actionable
or
relevant to you? What they've done over time is they've gotten improved the precision, which is the ability to say this story is about a specific subject.
Okay.
So if you're going to provide a news alert about a company, it needs to be precise in one dimension, which is the company.
Okay.
If you're providing a sales trigger and the sales rep has said, I want to be informed about the following categories of topics, 3, 5, 8, whatever they feel is relevant for them in making their pitch. And in some cases, it could be industry-specific subjects. You know, in that scenario, then you need to be precise across too. Because if you're 90% precise on the company and 90% precise on the subject, the event itself, then you're now down to 81% accuracy.
So and by accuracy, what do you mean? I mean, so give me some contrast, like against, I'm setting up a Google alert for myself on Every Market Media or GZ Consulting. I set up a Google alert, you know, because that's whatever. I'm trying to see a certain thing happening. So you're saying, all right, yes, and there's a suite of these. I want to see what? I want to see people buying servers. I want to see, I mean, what are, get really gritty with me. What are some of the...
Some cases, it may be specific purchases. Oftentimes what we're talking about, because then what you're talking about is really getting to sort of the technology platform information, which is another subcategory of sales intelligence.
Okay.
There are some vendors that only sell into tech companies and or companies that serve tech companies, for example, exec recruiters for tech companies.
Okay.
Those would be companies like DiscoverOrg and RainKing, and they provide a lot of platform information and project information that they gather through direct research on their
end. Do you consider that more like specialty technology or more traditional? Like I said, I feel like those brands ring with me as technology, and I just want to make sure I'm clarifying here for anybody that missed
they're
that.
They're vertical specific.
They're vertical specific.
If you went into, let's say, advertising and marketing, you'd look at somebody like The List or Redbox. There are some sales intelligence products that are vertically oriented.
Got it. Okay. So they're sort of branching out from this idea, this broader idea of sales intelligence. Okay. The traditional type. So just clarify then. Okay. That's technology. That's vertical specific. So what do you regard as a more traditional type? Some of the less accurate ones or the tools that have gone away. Give us a benchmark.
I wouldn't say they're less accurate.
Okay. Okay. Fair.
But they're more generalized.
Okay.
They're not vertically oriented.
Okay. So do you mean signs like stuff you see on a LinkedIn or something like that, a typical press release aggregator or like a news feed or something like an RSS notification? That's what you'd consider like traditional or a Google alert. Is Google alert traditional?
No. I would just view that as just sort of a general alert system.
Okay.
Because it's really just giving you one information element.
Okay.
There's a news story that mentions in text the name of this company.
Okay.
So imagine trying to track UPS or the Gap that way.
Right. Oh my gosh. Yeah. Right. Just so much. It's all noise, no signal for the sales rep anyway.
Exactly.
Yep.
That's the precision problem. If you're doing it based purely on semantic information, looking for specific strings, and even if you put in a few block words, you're still going to get too much noise.
Well, I think that's a great point to talk about. Okay, so we talked about some of the special. I don't know if there's anybody else you feel like you should mention that would be an awesome tool for a salesperson out there using. But I'd say let's wrap up on that. And I'm really curious about talking about some of these folks are getting this data. And I think that sells a lot of the accuracy here. Folks are saying, well, how is this different than, you know, a salesperson just using LinkedIn to sort of keep their nose to the ground? Isn't that what I'm paying my sales team to do? You know, why should I pay for these value-added services in my company? And what's what's the, you know, how are they getting this data that's different than I shouldn't just be asking Joe or Jane salesperson to just spend a little time in the morning researching their prospects. So, yeah, what do you think about that?
We had kind of talked about, you know, what is the value proposition with sales intelligence, but I hadn't actually gotten through all the features there.
Sure.
Sort of categories.
Yeah.
We talked about using it for qualification and warm calling and count alerting, which is things like sales triggers.
Okay.
But they're also very valuable for account planning, selling deeper into the organization,
yeah,
which could be either finding additional locations into which they could sell,
right,
or additional contacts based upon job function and job level in those organizations.
Okay. Yep.
Okay. As well as strategic information. What have they filed with the SEC? Is there a SWOT report? Can you give me an overview of the industry? Because I sell into broadly, and I don't know anything about the printing industry, but this prospect's a good prospect in the printing industry.
Right.
What's happening in printing? What can I talk about with respect to the printing industry that's salient to my product, my value proposition?
I follow.
So there's this broad set of information that you aggregate and pull together. My former employer, Avention, who was one source when I worked for them, I haven't worked for them directly for 5 years, was one of these aggregators. So they would take information about the companies themselves, the contacts, the bios, the news that they then turn into sales triggers.
Mm-hmm.
But they also had the SEC filings and the earnings transcripts.
Sure, the hierarchy,
lots of other content about the companies. So if you're a named account rep or a strategic sales rep, it's not just about how many people do I contact at that company, but who are the right people to contact and what should I be saying to them? How do I want to position my company with respect to their industry, with respect to the company, recent events at their company? And that's sort of the broader sales intelligence. So you'll see bios and corporate families, social media links too.
So those are big for enterprise. I mean, huge. Like you say, named account rep. So that's big. Enterprise is big. Is this stuff of a value to a scrappier firm or to a smaller firm where sales might be serving 5 or 6 or 8 accounts, and is the value still there?
You know, the sales intelligence space includes firms that are really targeting SMBs as well.
Okay.
So it's really who are you targeting versus the size of your company itself, and what do you need to know about those companies? So, for example, if you're an insurance agency, or you're selling business, generic business services or office supplies or things like that, you're selling both businesses and consumers.
Right, true.
In that context, you want to talk to a vendor that has both business and consumer data. And that'd be somebody like a Sales Genie from InfoGroup.
Sure.
InfoFree has a product that also has multiple databases.
Mm-hmm.
And not only do they have that type of content, but they also have they'll also offer you databases around like new businesses and new parents and new households and things like that. So that's events, but this is more sort of data oriented events that are being garnered through various tools in the way they collect their data and put into specialty data sets alongside the business and consumer file.
Sure, from a many part mining process,
semantic
mining, or crowdsourcing. I think like Owler's tool. Obviously, there's a bunch of these out there, and some of them are nearly free and easy to use, and those are more of the crowdsourcing model. And obviously, license aggregation is usually pay for, but you can get some exclusive data in there for sure. So we're talking about SMBs. It works there. We talked about, do we want to get more into the methods as far as how we're aggregating this stuff? You want to talk about that a little, or should we really just get into benefits and kind of, I mean, you want to spend some time talking about aggregation methods?
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about aggregation. I think that's fine.
Okay.
And the first thing is we've talked about a couple of different methods.
Yeah.
We mentioned crowdsourcing, semantic mining, and aggregation, and what are those?
Yeah, exactly. And this is the part that I get geeky about. This is, I guess it follows more in the database world, this, collecting the events. How is the data actually, this is where I think the show even shines and maybe is where it's headed. So, yeah, let's talk about them. The first one I've got is license aggregation.
And it speaks to the quality of the underlying data, and some methods work better for collecting certain data sets than other methods.
Totally.
You know,
no
one has it all, and some actually will bring together multiple tools.
Yep.
So if you're a license aggregator, you can aggregate and do semantic mining, or you can aggregate some data from a semantic miner alongside data that's gathered through other methods.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So there's no restriction that says you have to be only a licensed aggregator or only do semantic mining or crowdsourcing. So a licensed aggregator will bring together, technically, I guess you could aggregate from just a single vendor, but it really wouldn't be aggregation.
Right, right. You could just pretty minimal compiling. Right.
But generally, it'll be a couple of data sets from different vendors. So somebody like an inside view, they aggregate from, I don't know, maybe 6 to 8 vendors in total.
Yeah.
You know, in their product. And a lot of that's around the company information.
What are some of the pitfalls to that method? I mean, I know we use it here with email and purchasing email from various sources, B2B, B2C. And we have considerably more sources than that, though we're more disparate and maybe even a more mature market. I can certainly talk about some of the disadvantages and maybe even some of the advantages. You know, the license aggregation method kind of turns your business model. It doesn't kind of turn your business model. It does turn your business model into arbitrage. So if you don't have semantic mining as a backbone, if you don't have a crowdsourcing, or if you don't have your own method, you're sort of at the mercy of your supply. And if your supply goes around you, that can be very bad, or if your supply takes funding or something. So I could talk about the drawbacks. What are some of the strengths, maybe, to license aggregation? Yeah. Quicker to market, maybe? What else?
Well, certainly if you're a vendor, you can get quicker to market by licensing other people's content and then building your functionality around it.
Right.
Then you just have to build the loaders, you know, yep. And the GUI and the feature functionality for it.
Yeah, but you don't have to actually worry about getting the guts together.
Right.
Which is where some of these companies have to take, you know, big rounds. And one I'm thinking of is HG Data, for example. They got a big round because they're pulling together all this unstructured data, which, you know, exists as press releases and all kinds, you know, and I guess that's semantic mining, really.
HG Data is a classic semantic miner.
Perfect example.
Focus on a specific space, which is technology data. So they basically collect for each company the products and vendors. It should actually say vendors and then products, because obviously it's many to one, right?
Yep.
Any one vendor may have multiple products.
Got it.
Pull that information together for each company. And they do this over time, so they also start to get a feel for, you know, who's coming and going from each company, which company's trending better or not.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got HG Data that does that through semantic mining. Datanize also does that through semantic mining.
Okay.
A company in Australia called Builtwith does
I've
that.
I've heard of them. Yeah, I've heard of Builtwith.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, those three companies are sort of the major companies doing a lot of semantic mining of the web. They can also look at the information from the website itself, because within the HTML code, there's a lot of JavaScript to send messages around these various tools.
Yeah, the aggregation stuff can be extremely, extremely expensive to build from a tech standpoint. I mean, you need real developers, you need real time to do it. I mean, building a script that goes through, you know, the HTML code of millions and millions of domains is not a small task.
It's not a small task. But it does get pretty good data around.
Oh, it gets great data, and it's built
targeted the information that they're gathering here.
Yep.
Keep in mind, it's company to vendor to products.
So, question for you: when we're talking about tying this back to a company, because it does, I guess, you know, you come back to this account-based sales development content. Using an HG for an example, right? I mean, we'll see that comes back to a company level. You give HG a company, they say, all right, here's the information on that. Who's pulling it back to company the best? I mean, is everybody still using the DUNS number as the backbone? I know we use domain. We'd love to have a DUNS number, obviously, but DNV's not in the business of selling that to resellers. So what's the backbone? What's the backbone? Who's mapping it back to companies the best? I mean, okay, so there's the data, here's the information about company. If you can't put that back to something we can action, it's still kind of useless.
At the company level, mm-hmm. particularly if you get to the global data sets, Dun & Bradstreet probably has the best global database out there.
Okay, at a company level?
At the company level, they cover 250 million companies now, which only about half are active. And you say, why would I care about inactive companies?
I have several guesses, but tell us.
You have no interest in inactive companies beyond knowing that they're inactive to ignore them, right?
Yes.
But if you're in marketing and you need to clean your database,
yep.
being able to process your Marketo file or your Eloqua file or wherever else your CRM files against a Dun & Bradstreet, they can tell you the following companies are no longer in business.
Mm-hmm.
They can also tell you this company is relocated to another address.
Yep.
And things like that. And in some cases, it could be simply the location is closed because they collect the data down to the location level.
Right.
So when you're doing it on the web, you're looking at websites. And one company could have one website. Certainly, there are a lot of companies, particularly small ones, that don't have websites yet. As surprising as that sounds.
Oh, sure.
A significant percentage of SMBs out there that don't have a web presence.
And we see the problem even on the flip side here where you have companies that are so large and they own so many web presences, it becomes difficult to sort brand from brand. Take Verizon in our domain stack. Verizon owns a Superpages type product. I'm blanking on the name of it, right? But they own all of these domains that SMB customers buy from Verizon and then put up, you know, Peggy's Hair Studio on a Superpages type site. Well, when you're looking through DNS for correlation, Verizon owns all of that. So, you know, one of the mistakes we made early in is calling that a parent subsidiary relationship. You know, I mean, see, right? It's owned by Verizon, so Verizon's the parent, so let's call it parent subsidiary. And back to our point about a D&B, Dun's number just makes that a non-issue.
Dun's number, you know that it is either a headquarter.
Yep.
Meaning at the very top of the family tree. A subsidiary, which is a legally independent, quasi-independent business underneath that company, or a branch, which is just an operating location.
Yeah.
So a branch could be a sales office, it could be a warehouse, it could be a retail location, it could be, you know, many things. It could be a restaurant location. It's wherever you're conducting business from.
Yeah, straight off a domain, you're just guessing. There's no
straight off a domain, you're mostly going to be going to that top level business at HQ, and you're going to have all this noise from all these products they own.
Right. Well, web products.
Those products could be subsidiaries, you know, and in some cases they may just be brands. The company owns.
Yeah,
so
right.
Procter & Gamble owns Tide. There's a Tide.com out there.
Sure.
You know, I don't know whether Tide is an independent subsidiary or it's simply a brand.
But and who knows? I mean, who knows? I guess you'd call it classically a brand, but and that's even a weaker example. There's plain old stuff out there using just domain where, hey, look, it's a park domain or it's a domain that just forwards. You know, if you list that as a separate entity, which again, in fledgling database efforts, if you're just using domain as your tree, there's just a lot of little data issues that you'll have to work through and access to something. I guess what I'm saying is for a listener out there building a database potentially from this conversation, if you're building a backbone and you think you're going to hack it together on just domain, you're going to have to do a lot of extra thinking. And a shortcut like a company unifier might save you a bunch of time.
Sure.
So we talked about some of the benefits. Let's just touch off on these. Customer wants to use them. You got some hard benefits and some soft benefits. Take them home. Why do we need sales intelligence?
It's important to recognize that originally sales intelligence products existed way back on CD-ROM, but really they've existed on the web for about 2 decades now.
Yep.
And the primary delivery method has been web browsers.
Okay. Yep.
In the last few years, they've branched out, and now they integrate into CRMs. Most vendors are fully integrated into Salesforce.com, fewer into MS Dynamics, SAP, Oracle On Demand, Oracle for Sales, whatever Oracle or Siebel name you want to come up with.
Sure.
up with over the years. Likewise, with Marketo and Eloqua, those are the most common marketing automation platforms. Mm-hmm. And the sales intelligence vendors have now said, you know, it makes sense for us to also support the marketing function.
Yeah.
We have all this intelligence about companies. We can help maintain your Marketo database or your Eloqua database from a quality perspective. We can also provide prospecting if you're looking to do ABM targeting and you want to find additional contacts at a company by job function. We can do that.
Yep.
So there's been this migration to provide different tools and integrate with these various
Make it easy. You know, I mean,
CRM first.
Salesperson.
Marketing automation platforms now. They provide APIs if you want to put them into third-party platforms or roll your own platforms or even the platforms they don't support yet.
Right, right. Well, and I think via API, you mean? Like via API. In other words, platforms.
By an API, yeah.
Yeah, and it's almost common now.
It's common now, so you can gather the data that way. And they have the APIs both to serve their customers and in some cases to license to other vendors.
Sure.
Wanting to license their data.
Yep.
And then finally, moving on to mobile, you have some mobile apps now, and you'll see either they support mobile browsers and will automatically recognize the browser and resize the presentation and formatting based upon the browser. Mm-hmm. So if I'm on my iPad, it's different than if I'm on my iPhone, and it's different than if I'm on my laptop,
mm-hmm.
so that they automatically resize and orient automatically.
Yeah.
I'm blanking on the technical term for that.
But it's the same thing. It really comes back to easy. If you want your data being a commodity, sales intelligence product, leads, whatever we're calling it, whatever specific thing it is, sales and marketing teams consuming it in front of them are increasingly asking for it to be easier and easier and easier. They want it in their Outlook. They want it in their Salesforce. They want it to not have to click 7 more times to get on to the next prospecting opportunity, and their companies are asking that of them. And so if you're like, yeah, you're on the road with your phone. I remember even 5 years ago, as when I was more in a full-fledged sales role, I remember our CRM, which I think was Sugar or something at the time, being available in a mobile app, and it was not pretty at all. And now, yeah, you're in Salesforce. Heck, I bet you SalesLoft and all some of these other smaller shops even have products now for mobile. RingCentral does. RingCentral's making a huge push. I mean, they're like your business's communication. So I think this stuff is getting really, really integrated.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So are people going to go broke? I mean, okay, it's getting really innovative. It's getting really convenient. The average company, I feel like I just read somewhere, is using something like 40 software products for their sales and marketing teams, something like that. 40 different software products. You consider, all the little bit drips and drabs. I mean, why should a company be spending money on one more thing?
Sure. Well, part of it is that the sales intelligence vendors, they're providing multiple functions and features and content sets.
Mm-hmm.
So over time, the breadth and the scope of what they offer clients is much broader than it used to be.
Yep.
So if you want multi-source aggregation for company and contact prospecting, if you want to do Salesforce integration and maintain the data, so mm-hmm. you can run, let's say, weekly or monthly, an enrichment process that basically does a data hygiene match and append against a reference database, you can go to vendors today and get all of that from a single vendor.
Yeah, okay,
as
absolutely.
Well as
one stop.
The research, the alerting, exactly. So some of it's sort of a one-stop place to get this. And they're starting to also build in some of these ABSD tools. We talked a little bit earlier about account-based sales development.
Mm-hmm.
Today, the ABSD vendors are starting to partner with the sales intelligence vendors. So
you
can go to a Quota Factory or a SalesLoft or an Outreach and pull in data from a Discover org or a Datanize or an Insight View and get that together.
I mean, it's a good relationship. I mean, and again, both one hand is washing the other. People are going to use various different tools. And I think as you see more of those partnerships form, it's going to be easier for those of us consuming it in an actual marketing fashion to do it easily. So I'm all on board for all those partnerships forming and putting more tools in front of us. Salesforce, I think, is a shining example, but I'd love to see some of these little guys make a solution that's not, the thing I feel like for SalesLoft, at least for an SMB like us, or not SalesLoft, excuse me, but Salesforce, is it's just so big. It's just so much tool. And Marketo, too. Unless you have, like, reams of content, it's nice to see some of these, like, leaner tools coming with more functionality. Because, I can totally see why a big organization needs a tool like a Salesforce, but when you've got a sales team of 5 or 6, some of the stuff it's just a distraction. It's just
you may want it with 5 or 6 reps and really no marketing department to speak of yet.
Mm-hmm. Yep,
might be something like an InfoFree or a Sales Genie that has a light SFA tool in it.
Yeah.
Or
you were just mentioning that, right?
That allows you to store your prospects.
I think in your market.
Eventually, as you grow, you can start tying those into these other platforms.
Well, let's hear it for the small guys, for sure. I'm excited to see some of the other tools come out. I love to see new products. I love You know, being a fan of making sales as much as I am, I love to see these tools that make it easier. I mean, before we go, I mean, is there anything else you think we need to know about sales intelligence?
You know, I think we covered a pretty broad set of information. You know, when you talk about the benefits, we talked about sort of CRM population, maintaining the data in the CRMs and maps. It also reduces keying. One of the things that sales reps hate to do is key information, re-key, copy-paste.
Mm-hmm.
It's both a big waste of time and also brings in a lot of inaccuracies.
Yeah, and everybody thinks their memory is great, and they just...
Data set, hit a button and say, this is my, these are the three contacts I want to reach out to at this company.
Mm-hmm.
Click on three boxes and then hit send to CRM or send to my prospecting list. You're done.
Done.
The data's there, it's available, and it's maintained over time.
Management's got oversight on the pipeline now. They didn't say, well, you said you were working those three new opportunities, but I don't see them in the pipeline. Oh, well, I didn't have time to enter them.
Right, and they can see that there's three contacts in there. They can also, if it's an ABSD platform, they would actually see calls or emails sent for it. If it's traditional sales intelligence product, they'll potentially see they've set up alerts on those companies.
Mm-hmm.
And have added contacts for those companies into the CRM. So there's a lot of value in sort of reducing the flow. One of the things that they don't do that well yet is around some of the social messaging and monitoring. And I think that's sort of a lost opportunity.
It's tricky. It's, you know, that they're kind of guarding that a little. If you see, I won't mention names so much in this capacity because I don't want to make anybody get upset. But LinkedIn certainly protects their property. And many a company is either rumored to be shut out, has been shut out, gets paper. You know, people want to link up to social, but I think they're a little scared what link up to social means because.
And the sales intelligence vendors have been burned by LinkedIn.
Yeah.
I used to work for them. I'll be blunt.
Yep.
They've signed contracts with LinkedIn to provide information into their platform, basically, you know, whether it's widgets or other tools.
Mm-hmm.
And then LinkedIn, a year or two later, cancels those contracts. They basically limited access to the API.
Yep.
A few years ago, LinkedIn decided they wanted to be their own sales intelligence service,
mm-hmm.
and they offer a product called Sales Navigator.
Okay, yep.
So,
yeah.
They basically become competitors of these companies and to some extent exist as a walled garden.
Yeah.
They blew off other vendors from being able to send data in as well as to retrieve data from. And they sort of operate, I kind of view it almost as going back to the AOL days.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where AOL.com kind of existed as its own universe. LinkedIn, to some extent, exists as its own universe.
Oh, it's absolutely a huge population. Salespeople use it every day. You're looking to say, okay, I know this person connected to this person. It's huge. And to your point, geez, we wish we could include more of it in sales tools. But yeah, I mean, they've sort of given up their, what's the word we want? Source agnostic or something. They've given up. They've given that up. And now they're their own entity. And now they're their own product. And I wonder if that'll bring along a new business social network or what the opportunity there is. Because, like you say, it's a very valuable tool, but if they won't let anybody plug into it.
Yeah. The other thing to keep in mind with LinkedIn is that they're being bought by Microsoft.
Yeah.
It was announced this last month. So if Microsoft owns LinkedIn, all of the information that you're putting into LinkedIn is now actually owned by Microsoft,
mm-hmm.
which could then be tying you into Outlook.
Oh, look at Windows 10. Dynamics. Look at Windows 10.
That becomes a whole other question and to be thought of in the future.
We do this user power setting on all new PC setups for Windows 10 machines, and we upgrade them. And we look at the privacy settings. And one of the first settings we disable, of course, is share my Microsoft ID across other products so I can have a unified advertising experience. I should make this part of the show notes to just show everybody where this is in Windows 10. But, yeah, no, the move from Microsoft buying LinkedIn and having that trove of data, which is now connected to the most popular office software in the world, Windows, and another popular office software, Microsoft Word, and that whole suite. All that data is one data now. And so I think it is very interesting, but I'm curious if, you know, like Google, if they'll just keep a stranglehold on it, even though it's big and they have all your stuff, if it's so convenient people keep using it, or, you know, if you're going to see, you know, maybe people heading in the other direction. I don't know. We'll see as far as business networking goes.
They'll have to figure out how to monetize it. They're paying a lot of money for that company.
For sure. That was crazy. It's a crazy multiple. I don't know that I've seen a number that big in the news in a minute. It's like 25 million or billion, excuse me, 25, 26 billion.
It's about that. Yeah. 25.2, I think is what it was, but that's off the top of my head.
Yeah. Well, that's great. So listen, I want to just, Michael, thanks for your time today and sharing your wisdom with us. It was a great conversation about sales intelligence. I know I've gotten a lot of value out of this content. I've learned some stuff today. So, listen, if anybody's listening and wants to stay in touch with you or reach out to get your opinion on something, how would they best do that?
Well, they can start first. I have a blog that's available, gzconsulting.org.
Okay.
So you can go to gzconsulting.org and read what I blog about.
Great. And they're good, folks. Give them a read. They're good, especially if you're in the data business. Like, Michael doesn't seem to plug anybody. It's great. It's very unbiased. It's a great reason you're the first guest on the show here.
You've been listening to The Corporate Data Show. To ensure that you never miss an episode, subscribe to the show on iTunes or your favorite podcast player. Thank you so much for listening. Until next time.